Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 119 of the Forge of Freedom. Today, I've got a topic that I think has flown under the radar for lots of folks, but I think is incredibly important, and that's the topic of FISA 702. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that is here shortly, but last week, the House of Representatives voted to reauthorize FISA 702, or Section 702, rather, of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And this has significant privacy implications. This act, this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is not new. It was set to expire, and the Congress had to act on it to reauthorize or renew Section 702. And one of the institutions that many folks have never heard of, but is mostly operates in secrecy, is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, commonly known as the FISA Court. And this court is a largely obscure, or it's largely obscure to the general public. However, like I said, it's not new. It was established in 1978, and the FISA court serves as a tribunal tasked with evaluating requests for wiretaps, data collection, surveillance permissions, and cases involving suspected terrorists, spies, foreign agents, etc. And the court operates, as I said, very discreetly, very sort of obscurely, and it operates, or it's comprised of district court judges who serve on a rotating basis. And the court operates, or these judges operate, under the purview of the Chief Justice of the United States, currently John Roberts. And unlike other judicial appointments, these FISA court judges are appointed solely by the Chief Justice, bypassing the need for congressional confirmation. And the genesis, or the origins of these FISA courts, trace back to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, which was conceived amidst the Cold War era to combat foreign espionage. However, these sort of seismic shifts occurred, as most of us know, post 9/11, expanding the court's scope to authorize mass data collection in the name of national security. And this evolution, this sort of mass surveillance, garnered scrutiny, particularly after the revelations in 2013 by Edward Snowden, when he disclosed extensive surveillance programs, and then, of course, sparking lots of debate about privacy and due process and national security. However, despite these challenges and despite these revelations, the FISA court's operations remained opaque, like I said, sort of obscure and fueling criticism because they basically seemed like rubber stamps of government requests for information. And while applications for searches occasionally are sent back for modification, the overwhelming majority are approved. Over nearly four decades, the court has greenlit virtually all surveillance requests. In fact, there was a video, and I'll link to it in the show notes, from the Federalist Society that at one point during a year, the court had given the green light to 2,000 requests while denying only 40. But Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act allows the government to conduct targeted surveillance of foreign nationalists living outside the U.S. without needing to obtain a warrant. So why do we care about it? If this is targeted, as the White House has said, as many politicians have said, if this is targeted at foreigners, at foreign nationalists outside of the U.S., why do American citizens care? Well, as recently as this month, a court opinion disclosed that that FBI employees wrongly searched foreign surveillance data for the last names of a U.S. senator and a state senator. The opinion also said that another FBI employee ran a query to using the Social Security number of a state judge who complained about alleged civil rights violations by a municipal chief of police. And this is just the surface. This is just barely scratching the surface of it. But critics of Section 702 worry that, including me, powers are too broad and allow for the incidental collection of data on U.S. citizens, and that the provision is ripe for abuse. And what's being referred here to as incidental, I think, gives the government far too much credit. I think that this is being used to target Americans, even when it's when they say it's not. But Section 702 allows intelligence agencies to gather large amounts of data, such as emails, phone calls, texts, and other communications on foreigners living abroad, as I said, without a warrant. As it currently stands, intelligence agencies cannot use the warrantless Section 702 powers to target Americans because that would violate the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. Although I've already, as I've said earlier, already given you examples of a few occasions where that's where they've violated that provision. But as we all know, the Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures, and but data on U.S. citizens is still collected when they interact with a foreign surveillance target. This is, as I said, known as an incidental collection. So if you communicate with someone outside of the United States, a foreigner outside of the United States, you may get swept up in this surveillance, this warrantless surveillance. And so that's the main concern here. And civil liberties organizations such as the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, have long opposed the 702 provision, arguing that it has been used as a backdoor tool for gathering information on Americans and allows federal law enforcement to prosecute and imprison people for crimes, even if they're not related to national security, based on information obtained without a warrant. The FBI, for instance, improperly searched for information in a U.S. database of foreign intelligence more than 278,000 times in 2020 and early 2021, including Americans involved in the January 6th Capitol riot and those who participated in the 2020 protests following the murder of George Floyd. And this was all shown in a court order. The government, of course, says it uses this information to protect the U.S. and its allies from hostile foreign adversaries such as terrorists, weapons dealers, and spies. And the Biden administration has urged Congress to renew it, arguing that it is necessary to keep us safe. Of course, it's always to keep us safe, of course. And there are litany of government expansionist measures that are taken in the name of keeping us safe. Of course, none of which really do that. In fact, many of them are counterproductive toward that stated goal. There has been a lot of bipartisan support for Section 702 in the past, especially as it was during the Bush administration in the wake of 9/11, but that's changed in recent years. And there is more and more, especially Republican opposition to Section 702, particularly the warrant or the warrantless provision in the section. But it's also faced opposition from Democrats who worry that it may hinder American civil liberties and human privacy, our human rights. But Senator Mike Lee from the Republican from Utah, he has long pushed for changes to Section 702, said that he was skeptical that federal law enforcement would use the power properly without guardrails placed on it. Why should we ever trust the FBI and the DOJ again to police themselves under FISA when they've shown us repeatedly for more than a decade that they cannot be trusted to do so? And there's a letter, and I'll link to this in the show notes, from 21 privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties organizations who submitted a joint letter to the Senate last month demanding that Congress not reauthorize Section 702 without such reforms as imposing warrant requirements to spy on Americans and instituting a stronger judicial review process and safeguards for foreign targets who are unlikely to be involved in threats to national security. Like I said, I'll link to that letter in the show notes, but that letter was signed, just for instance, by the ACLU, Americans for Prosperity, the Brennan Center for Justice, Defending Rights and Dissent, Demand Progress, Due Process Institute, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and so on, the Electronic Privacy Information Center. A lot of these organizations, which I follow on social media and follow their work on a regular basis, they're not exactly extreme organizations. They're very middle of the road on many issues. Of course, I don't agree with the American Civil Liberties Union on many occasions, nor do I agree with Americans for Prosperity on many issues. But those are examples of more liberal organizations and more conservative organizations, both of which have signed on to this letter. And I think it's an interesting letter highlighting many of the problems with Section 702. Like I said, I'll link to that letter in the show notes. It's called A Foreign Intelligence Law Turned Domestic Spying Tool. But last week, Congress in the House of Representatives moved to amend Section 702 through the Biggs Amendment, which would impose a warrant requirement if the surveillance involved the collection of American data, and which seems common sense. Who wouldn't want to bring this law into compliance with the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment? After all, the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution clearly and plainly says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And this Section 702 clearly is a blatant violation of the Fourth Amendment, and the government doesn't want to give up that power. As we know, any power that the government seizes, it is very reluctant to give up. And likely won't give up. So that's what this amendment, this Biggs Amendment that was proposed in the House last week would do. It would impose a warrant requirement if the surveillance involved American data. Nevertheless, the amendment failed in a very close vote. As a matter of fact, I'll pull it up here. The amendment came close to passing, but didn't pass. It was 212-212 tie vote in the House and failed to be adopted. And the White House and the Biden administration lobbied heavily against this amendment. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who was previously very much in support of a warrant requirement. The White House and intelligence agencies got his ear and changed his tone, and he lobbied against this amendment as well. He's turned into quite the deep state pawn. He's, of course, in favor now of all the foreign aid spending, whether that's Ukraine or Israel, and now in favor of mass surveillance of American citizens without a warrant. So where does that leave us? The House passed the reauthorization of FISA 702, Section 702, without the warrant requirement. And now it's in the Senate. And the Senate is moving quickly because they have to take some action by tomorrow, according to the White House and according to the Senate leaders. But I think in reality, this was given at least temporary authorization to continue through early next year without reauthorization. Nevertheless, this is a two-year reauthorization, and if the House authorizes the reauthorization of Section 702, it would be in effect through 2026, or at least most of 2026. So why am I bringing this to your attention? Why should you care about this? Well, as I said, there are thousands of instances where the FBI and other intelligence agencies have abused the powers created by Section 702. We can't trust those organizations to stay within the bounds of the authority that the law gives them. And this law, this amendment, the Biggs Amendment, all that it required was that they obtain a warrant if the information involved an American citizen. And they went down kicking and screaming to avoid that impediment. And lots of people will say, well, I don't have anything to hide. Why do I care? Or I never talked to a foreigner. Okay. Well, that doesn't mean you won't get swept up in this information collection. Number one. And number two, this I don't have anything to hide attitude may be true right now, but that assumes that the same people will be in power in 5 years, 10 years. When will you have some unapproved opinion? When will the data that they collect through your emails, through your text messages, through your phone calls be used against you, be weaponized against you on loan applications, on job applications, for tax collection, etc.? There are lots of potential nefarious uses for this data, this mass data collection. And furthermore, I mean, privacy is a human right. Unless you choose to give over the information, the government should be held to the restraints imposed by the Bill of Rights, by the Constitution. Remember, go back and listen to the episode, and I'll link to it in the show notes, where I talk about the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was adopted as a restraint on a government that was given very express and limited authority. And basically what the government is asking for here is ambiguous and unlimited authority to collect information on people abroad and American citizens. There's one person, her name's Naomi Brockwell. I'll link to her Twitter page or her X account in the show notes. She is one of the, I think, most effective advocates for privacy and why people should care about their privacy. I think she addresses this "I have nothing to hide" attitude very well, and I think that people should give more consideration to the data that they create and transmit, especially in a way that can be intercepted by not just hackers, but our government. So anyway, I don't know yet. I'm recording this on Thursday evening, April 18th. I suspect the Senate will pass. This will reauthorize FISA Section 702, but I wanted to bring this to your attention. And I also want to share here, if you're watching this podcast by video, a series of tweets that I think are pretty interesting and effective. This is from Elizabeth Goteen. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly, so I apologize if I'm not, but she's the co-director of Liberty and National Security Programs at the Brennan Center for Justice, which is a somewhat left-wing organization. But nevertheless, I think what she has to say here is very good on this Section 702 issue. And I'm just going to go through some of these tweets here. She says, "I'm sad and frankly baffled to report that the House voted today to reward the government's widespread abuses of Section 702 by massively expanding the government's powers to conduct warrantless surveillance." And she posted this April 12th after the House voted down the Biggs Amendment, the warrant requirement. She goes on, she says, "The amendment to require the government to obtain a warrant to search Section 702 data for Americans' communications failed by an achingly close vote of 212 to 212, followed by some truly shameless misrepresentations about the amendment from Mike Turner from Ohio, the White House, and others. Opponents branded the notion that the government should need a warrant to read Americans' communications the core of the Fourth Amendment and the guiding principle for searching Americans' private correspondence for more than 200 years as extreme." So complying with the Constitution, complying with the Bill of Rights and the Fourth Amendment is considered extreme by our own government. "Members whom I previously considered to be civil liberties champions, they know who they are, inexplicably abandoned the principles they have espoused in the past and voted to leave Americans vulnerable to continuing surveillance abuses." She posts a link to the members, to the roll call, and I'll link to that as well about how particular members of the House of Representatives voted. I think you should take note of that as well and consider that during the next election, and call your representative and let them know how disappointed you are in their vote if they voted against this amendment that would require a warrant. "That's bad enough," she says, "but the House also voted for the amendment many of us have been calling Patriot Act 2.0. This will force ordinary," and this is really concerning, "this will force ordinary American businesses that provide Wi-Fi to their customers to give the NSA access to their Wi-Fi equipment to conduct 702 surveillance." That's just some creepy stuff right there, as if the FBI and the NSA weren't already engaged in enough creepy behavior. Now they want to force businesses to allow them backdoor access to surveil their Wi-Fi networks. She says, "I'm not kidding. The bill actually does that. If you have any doubts, read this post by a FISA court amicus who took the unusual step of going public to voice his concerns. Too bad members of the House didn't listen." Next time you pull out your phone and start sending messages in a laundromat or a barbershop or in the office building where you work, just know that the NSA might very well have access to those communications. And that's not all. The House also passed an amendment authorizing completely suspicionless searches for the communications of non-U.S. persons seeking permission to travel to the U.S., even if the multiple vetting mechanisms already in place reveal no cause for concern. "There are more bad things," she goes on, "in this bill. A needless expansion of the definition of foreign intelligence, provisions that weaken the role of amici in FISA court proceedings, special treatment for members of Congress, but it would take too many tweets to cover them all. The Senate should not pass this bill. The government already obtained approval from the FISA court to conduct Section 702 surveillance until April 25th. according to, or April 2025, I believe is what that means. According to the administration, that approval will stay in place even if Section 702 lapses. That means there is no rush. It's critical that Congress get this right. The House got it massively, egregiously wrong. It must be fixed in the Senate, however long it takes. Please call your senators and urge them not to pass this disgraceful bill. So that was a long-winded series of tweets there, but I thought they were worthwhile sharing. And let's face it, like I said, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson said that he is a wartime speaker. He considers himself to be a wartime speaker, of course, referring to the conflicts in Ukraine and Israel and Gaza and Iran. But let's face it, the real war here is against the American people. They are rushing to make sure that they can continue to spy on American people, on you and I, on American citizens, not just foreign agents, not just potential terrorists. They want the information about you and me. And that includes from business Wi-Fi networks, domestic business Wi-Fi networks. Of course, there have been a few representatives and senators that have been very good on this issue and other issues. Rand Paul is one of those, and Thomas Massie, of course, who are generally the only two that you can reliably count on in Congress. Rand Paul says, the government's warrantless spying on American citizens is dreadful, wrong, and unconstitutional. The only way to fix FISA is to prevent the secretive Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court from ordering the surveillance of Americans and prohibit the feds from monitoring our emails, phone calls, and texts. I will insist the Senate debate and vote on my amendment to restore our Fourth Amendment rights. And then I want to share this one other tweet before I close up here. This is from the 10th Amendment Center. He says, which is run by Michael Bolton primarily. He says, James Madison had a different take on how well parchment barriers would work. And that, of course, referring to words on paper, a parchment barrier, like the Bill of Rights, like the Constitution. He says, James Madison says, rather, a mere demarcation on parchment of the constitutional limits of the several departments is not a sufficient guard against those encroachments which lead to a tyrannical concentration of all the powers of government in the same hands. So what is the guarantee? What is a sufficient guard against these sorts of encroachments? Well, it's an engaged citizenry. It's a citizenry that doesn't allow these sorts of encroachments. We have to be engaged. We have to stop them. We have to refuse to comply when they do violate our rights. And our freedom dies with apathy. All right, I hope everybody learned a little something. This is a kind of a complex topic. FISA 702 is not a simple mechanism. I'm also going to link to a video from the Federalist Society, which was, it's a relatively short video, but I think helps conceptualize how this process works, how these intelligence agencies work with the FISA court to conduct this mass surveillance. So definitely check that out if you're interested in how that works. As always, I'll be back for Monday Gun Day. Keep an eye out for that. We'll have a discussion with Mike Uli again. He'll be back on the show. And pretty soon here, it's April 18th today, the day I'm recording this, the NRA annual meeting is coming up next month. So keep an eye out for that. If you've never been, definitely encourage you to go. There's a lot of great educational opportunities at the NRA annual meeting. I just wanted to plug that. All right, well, that's going to be it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't forget to like and subscribe. And as always, you can find us on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, and all the most popular podcast streaming platforms. You can also find us at forgeoffreedom.com, where you can also see all the show notes and where I also occasionally post on the blog. You can also find me on X at Forge of Freedom. Thanks, everybody. And until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter at Forge of Freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.